No. I'll talk to the people on this project.
So they can do my role. That's all you got to worry about.
All right, we're... Hold on.
Good afternoon. The Senate Judiciary Committee is in session. Well, let me rephrase that. The Senate Judiciary Division of the Senate Finance Committee is in session. First up, we have Senate File 1922, Senator Cohen.
Happy morning. Now it's afternoon. Oh, see.
Yeah, you're looking sporty.
Senator Cohen, welcome back to the committee.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members, I told Senator Hall when he saw me here that it's like coming back to visit your old home.
Deja vu.
And, you know, seeing who's living there in the house now and if it's being taken care of. And it just feels like, like that or a high school reunion or something. It's
you
great.
Calling us old?
Pardon? No.
Father Latz here.
Mr. Chairman, the only question I have is whether...
None of us go back as far as you do, Senator Cohen.
The only question I have is whether or not Senator Champion is upholding the fine work I did in this committee. I don't know if that's the case
legacy.
Or not. But
is that what it is?
Yeah. Sure.
So
we'll make an assessment at the conclusion of this session.
Exactly.
We'll see how we're doing.
And that would mean I'd come back on the committee.
We may need you to come back, Senator Cohen. We'll see.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, members, Senate File 1922 is a simple bill, and we have folks both from DPS and the Ramsey County Attorney to testify, but it's to provide some of the one-time money. This would be on a one-time basis. It's the non-expended money to be used as reimbursements to various law enforcement agencies for the training on sex trafficking. And obviously, this committee has dealt with that issue. Mr. Chairman, in your bill last year, you certainly dealt with that. This is a fairly simple bill. There's an amendment, I think, relative to the effective date. But if we might hear from the witnesses relative to what's going on and how this money would be effectively used. I don't know if Ms. Schumacher or who would like to start.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Erica Schumacher, and I work for Ramsey County Attorney John Choi. Thanks to your leadership last year, you appropriated $2.8 million to combat sex trafficking statewide. If you recall, $1 million of that was for shelter, $1 million was to fund a statewide director and six regional navigators. $700,000 came to our office to coordinate statewide protocol development and training, and $100,000 went to the Post Board to reimburse law enforcement to attend the trainings. And so, unfortunately, the language that year didn't allow us enough time to train 1,000 officers, and so what we're asking for from the committee is to extend that deadline to June 30th of 2016 to give us a little bit more time to carry out the legislature's intent.
Sounds very good. Mr. Melton, care to add anything?
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Neil Melton. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Post Board, and we've had many conversations between Ramsey County and the Post Board. We do this all the time for training reimbursements, and we are ready to do this as our standard practice.
All right. Senator Cohen, any final comments?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think Counsel has an amendment that will clarify the bill.
Counsel?
Mr. Chair, members, I did have this written, and I don't know if – I don't think I made copies. So it would be an oral amendment on page 2. Delete the new language on lines 2.10 to 2.12 and insert these funds are available until June 30, 2016.
Does anyone have any questions in connection with this amendment? Any discussion? Anyone in the audience have any concern about it? Right. Senator Champion, as part of the legacy, will move the amendment.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Anyone in the audience wish to be heard at all on the bill? Any discussion from members of the committee? Senator Lemon.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have a question about the effective date. The effective date – oh, wait. I'm sorry. I'm on the wrong bill. This isn't the bill about the part-time licensure. I'll hold my comments.
Okay. Now you have telegraphed your concern. So
it's my re-election bill, Mr. Chair.
The audience will scramble to figure out how to preempt your concern before we get there. All right. Any further discussion on this bill? All right, then I think our next task is to move Senate File 1922 back to full finance. Senator Champion so moves?
So move.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. It's nice to be back. I look forward to many other return visits.
Next time, bring donuts, Senator Cohen.
Does that mean we vote to reconsider Cohen's bill?
All right. Next up on the agenda, Department of Corrections relating to their supplemental funding requests. So come on forward.
Where's Mr. Carlson?
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Lisa Wojcik. I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Operations Support for the Minnesota Department of Corrections. Today we come with two recommendations from the governor's budgets for the DOC. The first request is for employee compensation. This is a $19 million request. It's for fiscal year 15, and all it does is cover the cost for the labor negotiated contracts. Public safety is a core responsibility of government, and our current law appropriations did not include any funding for these new bargained agreements. This recommendation will just maintain our current staff levels. It assumes a 3.5% vacancy rate. To put it in perspective, it equates to about 262 positions, and getting this money will help us avoid layoffs. The breakdown of the $19 million is $13.5 million for across-the-board and step increases, $3.2 million for employer-paid health insurance, $1.3 million for retirement contributions, and $1 million for fringe and other benefits. We broke it down by bargaining unit also so you can see which labor unions are receiving this money and the percentages. One thing to remember about the DOC is that we are a 24/7 operation. We have 10 correctional facilities across the state with over 9,500 offenders, and we supervise over 122,000 offenders within the state of Minnesota. We do not have any ability to control admissions to the agency, and we have extremely limited capability for early releases. 95% of our budget is general fund money. We have very few instances where we can collect revenue. About 70% of our workforce is in the Corrections Employee Retirement Plan. This is about 2,900 employees, which is a greater cost to our agencies than most other state agencies see. We pay 12.1% towards that retirement versus 5% for other employees. And we also pay health insurance for those employees after they turn 55 and retire. Excuse me. Our second request is for a population growth that was not expected in our projections from the previous biennial budget. I should say the current biennial budget. This recommendation is for $11.1 million. There was an unforeseen 8% increase in new court commits, and this has been our largest increase in 5 years. This is just a one-time adjustment for fiscal year 15. It's an overall increase of 513 offenders averaged over the year. The dollar amount was, of course, determined by our marginal per diem of $59.22. That per diem is a little bit higher sometimes than it's been in the past because we are in a situation where we are renting beds from county jails at this time. This increase in new commits has not been confined just to one type of offense. We've seen a 23% increase for meth, 15% for DWI, 10% for person offenses, 9% for property, 7% for other, 5% for criminal sexual conduct. And there's actually been a decrease for non-meth drug offenders. Also, it's not limited to just one particular area of the state. We've seen a 7.3% increase in the metro and an 8.5% increase in greater Minnesota. Top five counties with the largest increase, Ramsey, St. Louis, Otter Tail, Scott, and Douglas. With that, we will stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Wojcik. Are there any questions from members of the committee in connection with the Department of Corrections? Sure. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Ms. Wojcik, Did you say that there are some Department of Correction personnel that are now retired over the age of 55 who as a part of their retirement conditions, receive health care benefits?
Ms. Wojcik.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, yes, it is correct. Any employee who retires under the Corrections Employee Retirement Plan, we pay their health care insurance from the time of their retirement until they reach age 65.
And then they would be, Mr. Chair, they would be eligible then for Medicare or whatever is going to be the model at that time. Has that been a longstanding provision that I'm guessing that was a product of collective bargaining sometime in the past. Has that been around for a while?
Ms. Wojcik.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, it's been around as long as I've been in the department, which is 26 years.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions from members of the committee? Anyone else in the audience wish to be heard on this? All right. Well, then I think the
what are they moving around upstairs? My gosh.
Okay. So procedurally, what we're going to do is we're going to lay this issue on the table for now, and then when we get to our formal adoption of the division supplemental budget article, it'll be included as a part of that. So thank you, Ms. Wojcik.
Thank you.
Senator Champion, Spongeman, Senate File 2214.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee, for considering Senate File 2214. As the committee knows, that this is the expungement bill, and this committee has had major discussion around the expungement bill, and so I'm going to focus on the financial aspects of it. As you know, with the expungement bill requires there to be data to be, you know, maintained and for state agencies to disseminate that information upon request. And with that, there are some fiscal implications. You should have in your packet, or at least I think you have in your packet, and I do have three amendments that I'd like to add on to the bill, but you should have in your package the fiscal note that was drafted in anticipation of this committee hearing, and there's been some changes to that fiscal note, and I want to make sure that I get a chance to walk through that. So the first one, and I'll have someone from the Department of Public Safety come forward, which will be our first testifier. She will cover and talk about the initial cost that the Department of Public Safety identified, which was roughly $853,000. But now, since that time, we've had an opportunity to talk, and so there's been some changes. So Mr. Chair, if we could have the testifier talk about that fiscal aspect of things.
Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Scott.
Thank you. Dana Goetz with the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. So as Senator Champion said, we did have the opportunity to meet recently with him and Chris Turner to discuss the BCA's fiscal note. And as you can imagine, it's been very difficult for us to predict what the volume increase will be in this number. And what the BCA did, how we estimated that there's approximately 1 million records that would be eligible for expungement under the new language. And so we thought a conservative estimate would be to take 1% of those would either file a petition or be granted an order for expungement, and which is how we came up with our numbers. However, after talking with Senator Champion, we did do some revisions and thought we could potentially obviously the fiscal note is driven by FTEs. We could potentially reduce those a bit and see, you know, after some analysis, after the language is implemented, what the need really is and come back if needed. We also determined that we could reduce the startup costs, which would take a little bit off, and also we could absorb the programming or development fees, within and have that completed by an internal resource, which would just delay, you know, a different project that we're working on. But we'd be willing to work with the author to make that happen.
And Mr. Chair, and it's my understanding that the Department of Public Safety says that they can do it for $600,000. Is that right?
That's correct.
Thank you. We appreciate your working to reduce that fiscal for us. Any questions for Ms. Gotts?
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, and the other line item there is from the Department of Human Services, and so I would like Mr. Kerber to come up and talk about that line item, and then there's one final line item that I'll talk about.
Mr. Kerber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Jerry Kerber from the Department of Human Services and the Inspector General's Office, and our proposal is based on a couple of factors, and I think the committee understands this, but as it clarifies in the bill, if somebody's petitioning for an expungement that would apply to the Commissioner of Human Services, we are served with notice of that petition, and so then we have an opportunity to explain to the court why we support it or don't support it. And then if the final order, if we've been served with notice and the final order specifically directs the commissioner to expunge our record, then we expunge our record. And so the increased costs that we have identified are really related to what we anticipate to be the increase in the number of petitions that we'll be responding to. In this, it's hard to know what that might be, but we do about 748 petitions that we received last year, and we're anticipating it would be about a 60% increase. And so those will be, you know, it's about 4 hours of work per, 3 hours is done by an attorney, 1 hour is done by a clerical person. And so it's kind of a straightforward calculation that we've got here. The total would be $98,000, and then for our kind of work at Human Services as a federal match, that would be $34,000, coming back to the general fund for a net appropriation of $64,000.
Any questions? Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kerber, what do you base the anticipated 60% increase on?
Mr. Kerber.
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, we're trying to, trying to estimate. We looked at the BCA's numbers, and we tried to get some kind of an estimate of how many people who are not currently already interested in petitioning for an expungement to have an impact on DHS records might sort of essentially come out of the woodwork because of the significantly increased clarity of the law now. And a little bit broader reach, certainly. So anybody who may have a conviction that's, misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor level conviction or petty misdemeanor now has a very clear directive in here as to what they would follow as to getting those expungements. So we're anticipating that some would. But to be quite honest, it's not that scientific. We're not going to double it, we don't think, but it's going to be, maybe half again as many. It's 60%. So is what we thought it would be a reasonable increase.
Thank you, Mr. Kerber.
Any other questions or discussion from members of the committee? Anyone else in the audience wish to be heard on this?
I just have
Senator
one
Champion,
more.
Senator Champion, you had one more
issue.
Thing.
Yes. Mr. Chair, if you notice in the fiscal note, there's a cost for the court roughly of $159,000, but that's because in my legislation there was an assumption or that would allow the court to waive or my bill waive the filing fee if a person wanted to file a petition for an expungement. And that wasn't my original intent, and so I wanted to make sure that it was very clear that anyone who wants an expungement has to pay the necessary filing fee. And so I would like the body to consider the A4 amendment. I think you all should have the A4 amendment, or we could have it handed out.
Members, it's in the packet.
And again, Mr. Chair, the A4 amendment just clarifies that a person who is seeking an expungement of the record shall file a petition and pay the filing fee. The filing fee may be waived in cases of like informa pauperis, and the person would have to go through that process in order to get a waiver from the court in those particular cases. So I would move adoption of the A4 amendment.
So, Senator Champin, your A4 amendment would actually align the bill with the fiscal note?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and therefore the $159,000 that's articulated on the fiscal note will no longer be necessary.
So, members, on the fiscal note that you have, the Supreme Court line would become zero if the amendment's adopted. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Champion, on line 1.8 of your amendment, what cases are described in 609A2 that is described in your amendment?
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, just those cases where if there was agreement with the prosecution and all the parties, those low-level diversion cases that would be automatically expunged.
Fine. Thank you, Mr. Senator Champion.
Thank you. Senator Champion, move. I'm sorry. Mr. Backus?
Mr. Chair, members, just to clarify, it refers to, if you look in the bill, lines 3.13 to 3.15, which is essentially current law, those people wouldn't have to pay the fee. So it clarifies that all the new people under clauses 2, 3, 4, et cetera, those people would have to pay the filing fee.
All right.
So
Senator Champion moves the A4 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator there's also Champion. An A3 amendment, and I just want to explain what the A3 amendment is. Now, after our last...
This is not in our packet.
Oh, it's being handed out right now, the A3 amendment, and I'll wait a moment. Mr. Chair, the A3 amendment is a result of discussions that we had here in this committee as to what would occur, if anything, if law enforcement or someone misused the records that they're going to have access to. And I know Senator Limmer and I talked, you know, feverishly about this, and I told him that I would bring back a penalty section so that it's clear that we expect individuals to use the records appropriately, but if not, that there would be a consequence for that. And if you look at the A3 amendment, it just says an individual whose records it expunds under this chapter may bring an action under Section 13.08 against a government entity that violates the terms of the expungement order or opens or exchanges the expunged records in a manner not authorized by law. And that's current law. We just brought it into this bill so that folks are very, very, very clear about that. And if you want any further clarification, we could ask Senate Counsel for any other for any further clarification that I failed to address.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Champion, the remedy that I'm looking at would be found in a civil court decision. Basically, you have to sue someone.
Senator That's Champion. Right.
That is my understanding, but I also let Senate Counsel speak to Ms. Pontius.
Ms. Pontius?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Senator Limmer, yes, that's the action, civil action under the Data Practices Act. You can sue for damages caused by a violation plus costs and reasonable attorney fees. And then also there are exemplary damages for willful violations of between $1,000 and $15,000. Now, there's also possibly other remedies that might be available, like contempt of court or something like that, but this would actually give the person who is the subject of the record a cause of action for damages.
And, Mr. Chair,
Senator
Champion, what would happen if the individual whose records are expunged, if they violate their terms or if they re-offend, is there a place in your bill that previously expunged record would then become public again upon conviction?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, what would happen is obviously the person who has a previously expunged record violates the law, then they would be charged with a new crime. And their expunged record can be used by the prosecutor in order to say, here's what they've done, and either it's enhanceable or something like that. So they're vehicles that would allow prosecution and law enforcement to still look at that expunged record and make sure that a person is upholding the law.
And, Mr. Chair,
Senator Limmer.
I can understand the prosecutor using that information to arrive at a suggestion to the court for a sentence. But upon that conviction of a new crime, would the previously expunged record be then made public again if that offender reoffended and was found guilty?
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, from my vantage point, and I can be corrected by Senate counsel, but that record could become public in a court proceeding, but it will not be open as we know it as a public record unsealed. I guess if that's what you're asking me is whether that record becomes unsealed all over again and anyone is able to look at it. And it's my understanding that the answer to that is no, but only in a particular place, such as doing a criminal proceeding or something of that nature. But Senate counsel can correct me if I'm wrong.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, Senator Limmer, yeah, I think Senator Champion stated correctly. There's nothing in the law that sort of like reverses an expungement order per se, but it could become public as part of a subsequent criminal proceeding if it was relevant to the charge or the sentence that was imposed. But the law is silent as far as, you know, reversing an expungement order.
Mr. Chair, I noticed that on the front page of Senator Champion's bill that on line 15, we leave it up to judicial discretion, as stated, saying if the court determines that the expungement of the record would yield a benefit to the subject. Would that judicial discretion carry forward on the timeline if that subject reoffended? Could they use that same judicial discretion to make the previous expunged record available to the public?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator, current law is silent on that question. I haven't seen a case that's addressed it. I think it would probably, once the expungement order is in place, it is in place. And
all right.
So with that, Mr. Chair, I would move adoption of the A3 amendment.
Further questions or discussion on the A3 amendment? Anyone else wish to speak on the A3 amendment specifically? Mr. Kinger.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is John Kinger on behalf of the County Attorneys Association, obviously seeing this for the first time like many of you. I do have, I think, at least my initial reading on 1.5 and 1.6, the language that violates the terms of the expungement order. Later in the bill, there's language about when we receive an expungement order, when a government entity, we have to seal it, and then we have to notify the petitioner that the record's been sealed. I'm going to assume that that's going to apply to that, and we would have some concern that just through a clerk error that we might not fulfill that part of this of the bill. We have expressed some concern about that section of the bill anyway as it relates to potential liability, and my initial read is we have some concern that because of a clerical error that we don't notify the petitioner, that we maybe accidentally don't expungement, and that there would be a cause for damages under this.
Ms. Pontius, would those concerns be any different than any other data practices proceeding?
Mr. Chairman, no. I mean, the Data Practices Act is sort of a I don't know if you'd call it strict liability, but if you violate a term, you violate. I don't think, though, the provisions that deal with distribution of the orders are actually part of the terms of an order, because the order itself is just the order sealing the record. So that's how I would read it, but it could. I understand the concern.
My understanding of most expungement orders, there actually is the court does direct the keeper of the record to notify parties, but that they need to do whatever they need to do as well. But we'd have to actually look at an order to see how they do it. Mr. Kingery?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I guess the only other two things I would add is under this bill, and we know that, there will be a lot more expungements. Also, we are expanding them now to executive branch records. So the potential for mistakes would obviously increase. I'm not talking about any sort of bad intent or anything like that. I'm just simply talking about a potential mistake that would give rise to damages. Again, there's going to be a lot more expungements under this bill, and we support this bill. I want the committee to know that. We went on record last Friday supporting this legislation.
I suspect the greater risk would be unauthorized access or inappropriate access to an expunged record. That's where the real exposure would be, and it's probably the target of the A3 amendment, I would guess. Is that right, Senator Champlin?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
So you're not really too concerned about clerical errors.
So if I might speak to that, Mr. Chair.
Senator Champlin.
So the issue really circled around if we are granting access to these records to law enforcement and county attorneys or law enforcement, period, that we just want to make sure that no one is using them inappropriately. And that's really the pond or the well by which this amendment came out of. So,
Mr. Kingery.
No, Mr. Chairman, and I know you've got a lot ahead of you, I think the rest of the language opens or exchanges the expunged records in a manner not authorized by law. I think that's pretty clear, and I would think we would support that. I think that's consistent with Senator Limmer's comments the other day with regard to this. Again, it's that violating the terms of the expungement order. I don't know if language, you know, intentionally violates. I don't know if we need to wordsmith it now, but I'm trying to avoid that simple mistake as opposed to an intentional act.
So with that, Mr. Chair, I would see that as a friendly amendment on line 1.5 before violates, put the term intentionally violates the terms of the expungement order. And then that way I think that addresses the concerns of the County Attorney's Association.
Counsel, I'm just trying to read the sentence as it would result from that. And does intentionally in that location, would it modify just the first clause or would it modify the language after the or as well? Mr. Kingery?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's just been pointed out to me that when you look at 13.08, they talk about a willful violation.
That's for the exemplary damages. Mr. Chairman, yeah, that's for the exemplary damages. That's for the exemplary damages. But it does use the term willful instead of intentional.
Well, willfully violates, I don't know.
Mr. Chair, if it is a pleasure that then we can, instead of put intentionally, put willfully, so that it makes it consistent with 13.08.
Ms. Pontius, do you have any suggestion with regard to
well, Mr. Chairman,
how to address this
probably
issue?
Just take what I was thinking of is just on 1.5 and 1.6, just delete violates the terms of the expungement order, so it would just be a government entity that opens or exchanges the expunged record in a manner not authorized by law, I think would get violation of the order and everything else. But it's clearly that you're just opening or exchanging it.
Then if you violate the court order itself, you're subject to contempt of court, but nothing more.
Mr. Chairman, members
we'll take
of the
that
committee.
Risk.
My members would be.
Your members would be, yes.
So, Mr. All Chair, right. I would like that to be my amendment.
So Senator Champion moves to, on line 1.5, delete everything after that, and on line 1.6, delete expungement order or. Anyone else wish to be heard on that amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. That amendment is adopted. Now, on the amended A3 amendment.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Champion.
It's my understanding that I should also, because this bill is going to move separately,
We need to adopt your A3 amendment now, too.
I'm sorry?
We need to adopt the A3 amendment first, and then we'll go to where it goes.
Okay.
Any further discussion on the A3 amendment as amended? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. So now we have the bill before us as amended, and I think as Senator Champion was going to say, in discussions with Finance Committee Chair and staff, that we're going to move the policy language forward as an independent bill, but we will carry the funding in our division supplemental budget. Is that your understanding, Senator Champion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Is that what you wish to do right now?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Any further testimony from anyone in the room? Any further discussion on the committee?
Yes, Senator Latz.
Senator Sharon.
And when we were looking through the fiscal note that we have, we were not included the language and the explanation for the human services components are not in this fiscal note. I cannot remember, perhaps the author can indicate if this has been, if the fiscal note on this bill has been reviewed by Health and Human Services Finance, because there is obligations in that budget for this bill.
Senator Sharon, we're going to carry that piece of the funding in this division's budget also.
Oh, okay.
So it would not impact the Health and Human Services division's budget at all. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does, excepting that we don't have the page 8 upon which that language, that descriptor, that further descriptor that Mr. Kerber presented to us is not in my materials. I have not seen the explanation for that portion of the fiscal note.
Seem to have had some copying issues. It seems to have copied the odd page numbers and not the even page numbers of the fiscal note. So does any member of the committee wish to see the full fiscal note and not just the odd pages?
Yes.
All right, we have a request.
I can pass this
over
in a
minute. All right, so what we're going to do... because we still have one other
testifier.
Well, there's another testifier that's signed up, with Sherry Nels and Neeson.
Yes.
Does she wish to be heard? Is she here?
Yes, she's here.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Please come forward. Let's do that, and then we'll pass out the full fiscal note to members as they wish to see it. Why don't we get that copied?
And so, Mr. Chair, Ms. Nielsen was not able to be with us before, and she really wanted to testify. She's also a constituent of Senator Limmer, and I do thank Senator Limmer for connecting us. And so I wanted to make sure that she could spend a couple minutes just telling her story and why she believes this is important, which gives us a little time to copy the fiscal note.
Talk slow.
Well, you're certainly welcome to testify. If you are done, before we have all the copies made, we will set this agenda item aside. We'll go on to the next one. We have two more agenda items, and then we can return to it to take action as well. So we're not going to let the bill disappear.
That's right.
Ms. Neeson, go ahead.
Okay. Well, as you know, my name is Sherry Neeson, and I am here today to share my story and put a face on an invisible population and educate communities. But before I begin with my story, I would like to say I'm a constituent of Warren Limmer's district. I'm a mother of two children, Brooke and Jude, 11 and 13. I'm a first-generation college student. In 1999, I graduated with my Associate of Science in Nursing. And in 2013, despite all the odds against me, I graduated with my Bachelor's of Arts in Social Work. I'm a survivor of abuse and abandonment as a child. I'm a survivor of an emotionally abusive marriage to a man in law enforcement. I am resilient. I am not a criminal. I am not violent. I am a kind, compassionate, hardworking individual. I am a productive member of society with strong morals and values, and I am a human with value, uniqueness, and a journey of my own, not to be put into a category, a box, or a group of people such as a welfare child or a criminal. Now imagine, if you will, the following. Please bear with me. The complexities are great, and I will do my best to summarize this nightmare. I have yet to wake up from it. It's been 4 years. On April 20th, 2010, my husband and I, along with our divorce lawyers, met with a mediator in regard to our children. Because I had no natural support system, no job, I was a stay-at-home mother prior to escaping the abuse of marriage, and no financial help, I was powerless and in survival mode. Months prior, he had said to me, "I'm going to get you bad, real bad." Unsure of what he meant, I feel that if I would have had a father, he would have never threatened such a thing, nor victimized me all over again as he had on April 20th, 2010. His wealth of knowledge with the law and power imbalance left me and my life in his hands from that day forward. After the mediation, I went to Rogers to pick up my baby pictures. Before the mediation, he would not let me have them. Upon arrival, my soon-to-be ex-husband was not there, only his sister. Surprised, I kept to myself, only coming to pick up my baby pictures. She approached me. She started to grab at my container. I just wanted to get out of the apartment and be left alone as I was grieving multiple losses all at the same time. To escape an unhealthy marriage with nothing left me extremely vulnerable and under his control. He robbed me of my motherhood and babies to punish me, a pain like no other. I exited the apartment by way of the patio. To make a long story short, I feel what ultimately happened was abuse of power. Someone from behind me, in a deep man's voice, yelled, "Hey, you. What are you doing?" Not sure if it was directed towards me, I turned around and it was my soon-to-be ex-husband's brother-in-law. He was smirking. Trying to get away from him, I turned back towards the direction I was heading. The instant I turned around, a Rogers police officer slammed me to the ground, handcuffed me, and kicked me in my side twice. I had a back brace on at the time, as I had a herniated disc that was soon to be operated on. By then, I was crying inconsolably. I did not understand what was going on and why, and never had I dealt with the law in such a manner. No criminal history, no law-abiding individual. Eventually, the police officer got down on my face as I continued to lay motionless on the ground. He sternly said, "Do you know why you're being arrested?" Still crying, I said, "I have no idea what is going on." He replied, "Because you hit me." To this day, I know I did not hit that police officer. To this day, I know who I am and have always been. My rights were never read to me. I was never questioned, nor was a report ever taken from me. I was taken down to Hennepin County Jail for the first time in my life. I was booked and placed in jail. With no financial means and no family, I remained in jail for 4 days. Later, upon release, I found out that he took my car, my lifeline, while in jail. Now the days following, I found myself feeling paralyzed again. I had no means of transportation to get to my minimum paying job. So as I had mentioned, when I left the marriage, it was during the recession and I was a homemaker, so it was hard enough to find a full-time job at that time. Later that week, I found out that I lost a major job opportunity as an RN because of the pending charges, a job that would have gotten me out of survival mode, allowed me to fight for my children. Taking more blows to my spirit, I started to question if he was trying to kill me without fingerprints. With perseverance, I sought help from the Legal Rights Center. When it was said and all done, I was told to bargain down, as juries tend to side with cops, and to return to the courts in 1 year for expungement. Because of no money for a good attorney, no resources, no family, I went with what was advised. I wanted to go to trial, yet I knew what I was up against. So on August 6, 2010, I was convicted of fifth misdemeanor assault. Weak to my knees and breathless, the sentencing documentation was filled out, and Judge Lloyd Zimmerman closed by stating, "I could apply the jail credit, but I do not think you'll ever be back in front of a judge for criminal things. I am sorry for the misfortune that brought you into court, and I hope things are better for you." Over the course of 2010, I continued my counseling, attended support groups, worked with the Minnesota workforce in trying to find a job with a livable wage, worked full-time at Target, completed a voluntary anger management group, continued my schooling, focused on what I could do for my children rather than what I could not. In essence, I was doing everything I could to wake up from this nightmare and be the person that I am. Needless to say, after returning to the Legal Rights Center in August of 2011, I found out that you have to wait 5 to 10 years to seek expungement. And even if I were granted expungement, the BCA records would not be sealed. I left in tears. I questioned if life was meant for me. I questioned if I would ever get out of survival mode, be able to return to my nursing roots, or be the social worker I was meant to be. By this time, I was living out in my car. After the conviction, I found myself no longer being able to provide a roof over my head. I was doing everything I could to save myself from hitting the ground. With a survivor mentality, I thought if I could make my car payments, I could still work at Target, have somewhere to sleep, and be able to transport myself to Lifetime Fitness for daily shower and exercise. I could use work, the library, school, church, and Lifetime Fitness as places to be that brought me hope, strength, and a sense of belonging. I thank God every night for the job I had at Target in my car. Yet while resting my head in the trunk air of the vehicle, I cried out to him nightly. I went to the Council of Crime and Justice. I sought amicus. I submitted my material to Innocent Project of Minnesota. I continued to work with the Minnesota workforce. I met with Gordon Solo. I did as I was advised and submitted all the material to DHS for set-asides. I collected letters of recommendation, personally and professionally, and I continued my schooling while homeless and couch hopping. On November 21st, 2013, I returned to the courts and request for expungement. Despite all evidence, and the petition was denied, not because of who I am or the surrounding circumstances, but because ultimately it had only been 3 years. Can I ask, without family, resources, a good job, money, how does one even survive 1 year, let alone 5 years? I can see why some commit suicide and others return to either the false gods addictions and or recidivism. All in all, I did and continue to do everything I can to come out of this alive and on top. I have never turned to the false gods. I rely solely on one, the one and only true God for faith and perseverance. To this year, 6 years later since leaving an abusive marriage, I continue to live in survival mode and have yet to wake up from the nightmare. No job has come through, and I have yet to move forward. Although I continue to be true to who I am, my eyes are sad because I feel as if I've been buried alive. Marilyn Fry once wrote, "Oppression is the experience of being caged. If you consider a bird cage, if you look at just one wire, you cannot see the other wires. If your conception of what is before you is determined by the myopic focus, you could look at one wire up and down the length of it and be unable to see why a bird cannot just fly around the wire. It is only when you step back, stop looking at the wires one by one microscopically, and take a macroscopic view of the whole cage that you can see why the bird does not go anywhere, and then you will see it in a moment. The reality is, I am not a criminal. I am not violent, and I am not a victim. Instead, I am a survivor with many wires to my own birdcage. Although I'm aware that I would much rather have mountaintop experiences than time in the valley, I am full of gratitude for such times, as I have come to know that it is often the valley experiences of life where empathy and compassion evolves, spiritual formation occurs and deepens, and one pain becomes another's hope. In many of Martin Luther King's Jr. speeches, he has said, take the first step in faith. You do not have to see the whole staircase. Just take the first step. Today, I break my isolation in faith. Today, I ask you to take the first step in faith. You do not have to see the whole staircase. Just take the first step. God gives us the capacity for choice. We can choose to be led by the Spirit and alleviate suffering, or we can choose to be led by power and maintain closed-mindedness. I ask you to be led by the Spirit. Such revisions in the expungement bill are not meant to do more harm than good. Instead, it will only allow the powers to be, the judges, to see each case uniquely. With discretion, they will bring strength to the weak, power to the powerless, and justice to the unjust. This is not a free-for-all bill. Instead, it is a bill that will allow one's voice to be heard and a judge to practice in a way that is best for humankind. In closing, my name again is Sherry Neeson. I was born on June 18, 1977. It has hurt to be Sherry, and what my ex-husband has done to me has been mental torture. But today I ask you to please look at all the wires of a birdcage macroscopically before you shut the door on a human being, my life, your life, or someone else's for that matter. Today, although I graduated on December 14, 2013 with my Bachelor of Arts in Social Work,
I still await a response from the Board of Social Work in regard to approval or denial for licensure. Today, I continue to work at Target, low-paying job. I'm over $101,000 in debt with school, and I am paralyzed in contributing to society in more ways than one. Despite DHS set aside, despite my good work history and background, despite personal professional references, for once charged, you're forever a criminal. Can I ask you, does my life matter to you? I know I'm only one of many, but imagine, if you will, if I was your daughter or this was your life. Thank you.
Ms. Neeson, thank you for your testimony, and I admire your strength and wish you the best of luck as you continue to move, take that step on the staircase. Does anyone have any questions or follow-up comments? All right. Thank you. Members, you do have the fiscal note in front of you now. Does anyone want any additional time to look through it? We take a moment or two. I see some members are looking through specific provisions.
If there are no other questions, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Senate File 2214 to the floor.
Senator Champion, we're going to just look around the table here, see if any of the members who are reviewing the even pages of the 21-page fiscal note have any questions.
We're good.
I am.
Senator Hall is all clear. Senator Newman's all clear. Senator Sharon's all clear.
I'm clear.
Goodwin's all clear. Senator Limmer's on page 18.
13. I trust that it's okay, Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer puts his trust in our fiscal staff.
Just today.
Just today. All right, so Senator Champion moves that Senate File 2114 as amended be recommended to pass and be, we have to send it to the full finance committee because this is a division, so it'll be sent to the full finance committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee.
Senator Latz, Senate File 2480, and I believe you have an amendment. The A3 amendment?
I do. Madam Chair, the A3 amendment. This is the compensation for exonerated persons bill. I've got an amendment that makes some language changes unrelated to the fiscal aspect of the bill. Some of them at the request of the Attorney General to clarify who the appropriate party should be in the proceedings and in any litigation. So I'll ask the committee to adopt the A3 amendment and move it.
Okay, Senator Letts moves to adopt the A3 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Letts.
Madam Chair, I'm also going to ask fiscal staff to explain why there is no fiscal note on this bill.
All right. Thank you, Senator Letts. Mr. Turner.
Madam Chair and members, we requested a fiscal note on the Innocence Project. And in my discussions with MMB, it's been determined that this is a very, very difficult note to project. So the bill doesn't appropriate any money. But it also doesn't name a source for the money if anyone ever applies for and is actually exonerated. The way I think it's been envisioned is that we'd work it out on a model like the claims bill, where the Supreme Court panel would present the findings to the legislature and or the governor, and the money would then be appropriated as a change item in the following fiscal year. MMB has recently found out that there are two people who potentially could be awardees. And they are going to work up an urgent fiscal note at my request, basing their calculations on their histories. And we'll address those possible tails in full finance when we get that note. And like I say, after today, I spoke with MMB right before the hearing. When this hearing's over, I'll make that request. I'll get that information to them, and we'll discuss this further in Senator Cohen's full finance committee.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. Senator Letts.
Madam Chair, I do have some testifier here from the Minnesota Innocence Project, if necessary, to answer questions.
Senator Letts, did you want to explain your bill first, or do you want to wait until the testifier is done?
Well, Madam Chair, we heard this bill in the policy committee.
Okay.
To give just a brief thumbnail of this, this would provide a mechanism for compensation for those persons that were convicted of a crime, served time in prison, and were later, because they were able to provide sufficient proof of innocence, were exonerated of their crime, their conviction was vacated, and they were released from prison. This would compensate them for the losses resulting from that prison time.
Thank you, Senator Letts. And Julie Jonas, would you like to come up and testify?
Madam Chair, she's here available to answer questions only.
Senator Goodwin?
Senator Sheeran.
Thank you. We heard some fabulous stories of the two people that we're referring to in this committee. Might have been last week, could have been last year, could have been last week. It seems like a long time. But they were fabulous in articulating the basis for which we would have an interest in providing a way to compensate those who have been wrongfully charged, spent time, lost earning time, had impacts on their family. So I think we're very clear on the contents of this bill. And if I understood Senator Letts, because they're still working to try to articulate using a methodology what a projection would be as to the costs of something like this, and since that's not in place now, we really are being asked today to just to pass this to the next finance committee until that can be and that will be resolved by that time. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Sheeran, yes, that's correct.
So I think that since we've already had the really a good grasp of the contents of the bill and we can't focus on finance today, I just recommend that we take that action.
Thank you, Senator Sheeran. Any other comments or questions from members?
So,
anybody
Madam
else?
Chair,
in, I'll Senator, move. Senator Letts, anybody else in the audience that wanted to say anything on this bill? Seeing none, Senator Letts.
I move that Senate File 2480 as amended be re-referred to the full Finance Committee.
Okay. Senator Letts, Senate File 2480, move to Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Letts, we are on to the Judiciary Supplemental Budget.
Madam Chair,
article.
Fiscal is going to hand out a piece of paper that summarizes the supplemental budget proposal that I'd ask the committee to adopt for us to send to full finance. It's a very simple document. It doesn't contain any real surprises. Maybe staff could bring one up here, too. That'd be helpful.
Mr. Turner?
Madam Chair, I'll wait till Senator Letts gets here.
Oh,
okay.
Good
Madam
idea.
Chair, members, this is a very simple one-page spreadsheet. It's the recommendations from Senator Letts to the division. The first item would be for the Department of Corrections, the governor's recommendation of $19 million for operating increase, critical staff needs. That $19 million shows in the spreadsheet is being divided $16.2 million to the institutions, $1.9 million to community services, and $900,000 to operations support. Then the second governor's rec is $11,089,000 for prison population growth, and that will go towards the rental of county jail beds. If you'll notice, that is a one-time appropriation. We are not carrying tails. That $11 million has been picked up in the November projections and is now part of the base. Moving on, we have the two appropriations for the expungement bill, which were just recently discussed, $600,000 to the Department of Public Safety, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and $98,000 appropriation to the Department of Human Services, which is, if you'll see, is offset on line 28 by $34,000 in federal financial participation grant. And so we have a grand total general fund appropriation of $30,753,000.
Senator Letts.
So, Madam Chair, certainly I'd ask the committee to discuss that if they wish and to ask any questions, but I do have two amendments that I'd like to offer to put this bill into shape.
Let's do that now, Senator Letts.
All right. Madam Chair, the A3 amendment will conform the article to the numbers that are contained in the supplemental budget sheet that you just received. As we heard testimony in the expungement bill, there have been some modifications of the actual dollar amounts, and we need to make those changes in our proposed article as well.
Mr. Turner. Oh, Mr. Backus.
Madam Chair, I didn't exactly hear what Senator Letts was saying, but, you know, there is the SC-9825 Senate Council document that should be in your packets. That's the base document that contains the appropriations to the Department of Corrections to implement the spreadsheet. It also has two policy pieces in Article 2. It has from Senate File 228. 7-3, which is Senator Champion's juvenile bill that passed this committee, a provision, the exact same language that passed the committee on juvenile continuances. And then it contains a section 2 on page 3, Senator Cohen's Senate File 1922 that you just heard a few minutes ago. So these two amendments, the A3 amendment is the one that adds the expungement provision appropriations that were discussed, and then the A2 amendment is adding Senator Latz's bill that deals with the default misdemeanor that was also heard by the committee a couple weeks ago.
Okay, any questions from members on the A3 amendment? Senator Latz?
I actually had a question because I have in my materials anyway an A1. Did we need to adopt an A1? I had in my bill folder an A1.
So you have the A2? Oh, the A3?
Yeah. I think this one also had, maybe I have this because originally the plan was to include Senator Champion's expungement policy language in the fiscal article. And since we're not going to do that, we don't need to adopt A1?
Correct.
Okay. Then I don't offer the A1 amendment. I will offer that A3 amendment as described to adjust the dollar amounts for the Department of Public Safety and Department of Human Services to implement the expungement bill.
All right. Members have any questions on the A3 amendment? Senator... What's your name, kid? No, I'm sorry, Senator Newman.
I know you were messing with me, Madam Chair. I don't have the A3 amendment. I have an A2 amendment.
Okay, well, make sure you get that.
I wish that was an option. Yes.
Take a second here so Senator Newman can see the amendment before we vote on it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Newman.
The federal money that Mr. Turner was talking about a moment or two ago, is that on the A3 amendment?
It may be included in... Line 1.7.
Madam Chair, the federal money, Senator Newman, the federal money is not an appropriation by us. We account for it, but Mr. Turner can expound on it.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Turner.
The federal financial participation on your spreadsheet shows on 28, it's a revenue adjustment. We appropriate the total amount, which is $98,000, to the Department of Human Services. I believe it's annually for various things they do that qualify for federal reimbursement.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Turner. Madam Chair, I will have a question on that issue.
Senator Newman.
But it doesn't deal with A3.
So. All right. Well, then let's, any other questions on A3, members? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Latz, now you're on the A2 amendment.
So, Madam Chair, the A2 amendment is the bill that we passed that changes the default misdemeanors to default petty misdemeanors. It may have a positive budget impact, which is why we wish to include it in the fiscal article. We're also seeking to do this so that we can account for the process in the House so that we have a way to try to get our bill passed.
Any questions from members? If none, Senator Latz moves the A2 amendment to 9825. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Latz, your bill as amended.
I have no further comments, Madam Chair. I think Senator Newman might have wanted to
Senator Newman,
ask
you did
a
have
question about that federal match, but
yeah,
other than that.
Yeah, I did. Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Latz, Mr. Turner, whoever. Dealing with $34,000, it looks like a small amount of money going up to fiscal year 2017. if for some reason that federal money didn't show up, I would assume that we would have to make an adjustment in the future. Is that correct?
Perhaps we need to hear from the department on that. Does anybody from the department want to speak on that? Or Mr. Turner?
This is the 34.
Madam Chair, Mr. Newman, it is carried out in the tails. It's not reimbursed. There will be an adjustment, even though it's only $34,000 in the Department of Human Services budget. But I would like Mr. Kerber to answer your question with greater authority.
Mr. Kerber.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Jerry Kerber from the Department of Human Services, and I'm sorry I didn't hear the question.
Madam Chair.
Senator Newman.
Thank you for coming to the table, Mr. Kerber. My question is on the $34,000 in revenue adjustments from Department of Human Services. Just as a matter of a hypothetical, if the federal government did not forward that money to us, I would assume that beginning in the year 2015 through 2017, we're going to have to pick that loss up. Is my assumption correct?
Mr. Cooper.
Madam Chair and Senator Newman, this is sort of a routine procedure for the Department of Human Services, and it's part of the cost allocation system. And there are regular reports. I think it's done on a quarterly basis from the Financial Operations Division of our department, where there is a report submitted to the federal government that identifies the funds that have been spent that are eligible for the federal match, and then that match is appropriated back in. It's deposited into the general fund, and there's an ongoing monitoring process for that. I'm not aware of any situations where it hasn't worked as it's supposed to work, but I think it's part of this would be one small part of an enormous report that's going in on a regular basis. But I think if there were to be a problem with it, I think we would know about it right away.
Thank you, Mr. Kerber. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions, members? If not, Senator Latz moves 9825 as amended to the Finance Division.
To the full Finance Committee.
To the full Finance Committee, excuse me, yes. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. One moment, please. Okay. I guess just the Judiciary Supplemental Budget. The Judiciary Supplemental Budget spreadsheet we will have to pass as well. So any questions on that, members?
I move its adoption.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. What we do now is we adjourn the Judiciary Finance Division. And so,
Madam
Judiciary,
Chair.
Oh, Senator.
I'm sorry. We adjourn, not recess?
Yeah. We adjourn.
Because it's
we're
finance?
We adjourn the Finance Division and
gotcha.
Convene as the Policy Committee.
Yes. So we adjourn the Judiciary Finance Division, and we gavel in. We will begin now the Judiciary Policy Committee. Okay. We have to wait a minute till the tape switches.